To my dearest friends, I am honored to welcome you back once more for a short investigation into some of the holiest of worlds known to exist across the vastness of the Imperium of Man. The galaxy, as it so stands in the 41st millennium, withers and rots in a most deplorable state, having been literally split in half by the Cicatrix Maledictum, while aliens and mutants rise up to forge their petty empires out of the ruins of the dying cosmos. The worlds of man are ceaselessly persecuted by the oppressive imperial bureaucracy, forced to suffer beneath the merciless grip of agents who care for nothing more than to ensure the total compliance of their tormented populace. And yet, somehow, in this time of unequivocal darkness, there is to be found an undeniable mote of hope. To reside within the Imperium of Man is to abide by the sacred tenets of the Imperial cult, which exists as the only religion permitted by the High Lords of the Ecclesiarchy. At its core, it reads that the Emperor of Mankind ascended from a mortal into a true deity, and through his divine power will he shepherd all of humanity into a golden age, free from all pain and strife. This faith is incredibly important to the Imperium, not only to ensure the united compliance of humanity towards serving the Emperor, but also to inspire their much-needed hope that there is indeed some form of divinity watching over them during their darkest of times. But across the inky blackness of the cosmos, we will eventually find entire planets which have been wholly dedicated to the furtherment of this belief, and they would be known as the Shrine Worlds. Their skies will shimmer with dense clouds of incense, occluding the grand spires and towering basilica up above, while the sanctified streets echo out with constant prayer, venerating the immortal emperor and his benevolent deeds. Each planet has been transformed into a reliquary, the mountains to be reshaped into the foundations of a great cathedral, the soils to be anointed by the holy tread of a billion aching pilgrims, and the oceans drained just to reveal the footprints of some long-forgotten saint. The light of dawn will be filtered through stained glass roofs, reverberating gently from the sound of the planetary choirs, chanting out their ceaseless psalm, rising through the thin breath of the upper atmosphere. There is very little produced upon these worlds, but the Imperials will find great solace in setting out on their pilgrimages, aiming to reinvigorate their faith in the God Emperor, whilst also to prove their loyalties to those who may be silently watching from the shadows. For today, however, we will be exploring the Shrine Worlds in their entirety, first by looking into how and why a planet is consecrated by the Ecclesiarchy, and then by investigating the magnificent architecture found across the world. After, I will lay out the concept of the saints and of the pilgrims who march for many decades just to spend one single day upon the holiest of worlds. But I have spoken enough, and with this introduction complete, I do believe that it is now time for us to begin. As most of you may be able to guess, our sermon today will require us to don our own pilgrim's garb and descend through the clouds incognito to begin our secret investigation into the numerous shrine worlds of the Imperium. To fully grasp how a shrine world comes to be, one must first understand the strange and ponderous machinery of the Imperial faith. We are all aware of the concept of religion, but within the Imperium, sanctity and faith have been somewhat perverted from a simple act of belief into a cold and calculated administrative process. The consecration of relics, the acknowledgement of miracles, and the sanctification of holy individuals, these are all overseen by a Byzantine labyrinth of priests, cardinals, and functionaries who ascribe a level of divinity based on dusty ledgers and prospective tithes. But for an entire world to be singled out as a most righteous and sublime place, it must have been identified as the home to a figure known as an imperial saint. These are individuals who once devoted their lives towards the furtherment of the emperor's dream, and who are now said to watch over the faithful if they are invoked through genuine prayer. Of course, their sainthood is almost always declared posthumously, but we will discuss these individuals in more detail later in our sermon. In any event, the consecration of a shrine world will often begin in a most macabre fashion with the death of one of these aforementioned saints. Somewhere upon a nameless frontier planet, a warrior may fall in the defense of a settlement, a missionary may be martyred for restoring order, or a miracle may be witnessed as the final sight before its subject simply vanishes from existence. Perhaps a beam of golden light strikes a battlefield at the hour of victory, or the corpse of a priest refuses to decay, or that a faint shadow uncannily appears in the exact shape of the emperor. The ecclesiarchy will take note of such omens, and the wheels of administrative canonization will begin to turn. That nameless individual, if so lucky, will be declared as a saint. And all of a sudden, that unsung rock they once called a home, forgotten by every star chart, will become a site of pilgrimage almost overnight. The faithful will flock to this new place, desperate to witness the evidence of the emperor's saints, but they will be rapidly joined by the priests, and then by the architects and masons, who will raise up a cathedral around the miracle, like flesh growing upon bone. Soon the cardinals of Terra will take notice, and if the event is deemed as pure, and if the saint is seen as truly untainted, then the world itself will be sanctified. From that moment, it no longer truly belongs to its old inhabitants, as the ecclesiarchy will descend en masse, justifying their seizure of land and displacement of the native populace, with their claims that it is all done at the behest of the emperor, and that any protest will be a clear mark of heresy. Nevertheless, in short order, the planet's old history will be erased and rewritten to further the growing myth of the imperial saint. Agri-worlds will cease in their productions so as to not disturb the priests. Hive worlds will be reformed in great temples, and even death worlds, once poisoned by radioactive muck, will be blessed with renewal, its air scrubbed clean through some titanic effort, though of course attributed only to faith and fervor. We must realize, however, that the creation of a shrine world is as much a political act as it is a spiritual one. For every saint newly canonized, there are 100 who are forgotten, their miracles deemed as inconvenient for falling outside of the established doctrines of the imperial creed. To declare a planet as sacred is to forever bind it to the will of the ecclesiarchy, and thus to the high lords of Terra. A saint's grave may be a source of holiness to the masses, but it is also a wellspring of control to those who rule, as every pilgrim who kneels and every coin placed upon an altar feeds not only the faith of man, but the endless coffers of the ecclesiarchy. Once the decree is given, the physical transformation can begin with earnest. Ministorum architects will arrive, flanked by hordes of mindless servitors once sentenced for crimes of heresy, yet now repurposed to serve the very thing they once fought against. The landscapes will be reformed, mountain ranges to be carved with symbols of imperial faith, while the rivers will be redirected to flow towards holy districts, forming sacred sigils when seen from above. In the upper atmosphere, orbital docks are to be reshaped into halos of brass and stone from which the fleets of future pilgrims will one day depart. The crowning act in the process of creating a shrine world will be of the grand consecration, a ceremony that may take many decades to finally complete. Countless relics will be transported across the stars, with the bones of saints, blood-soaked banners, and shards of blessed weapons to be amassed within the largest of new cathedrals. Choirs numbering in the millions will begin chanting their multi-year-long litanies, some destined to die from the strain of expressing their faith. The atmosphere will be seeded by sacred oils, triggered to fall as holy rains, until, at long last, the planet is graced with a new name, and when the last bell tolls, the world is reborn as a sanctified monument, ever to be remembered for the rest of imperial history. But not every shrine world ends as a success. Some are founded upon doubt, upon stories marred by inexcusable lies, or upon relics of a truly uncertain origin. It is whispered that many of the most celebrated worlds were sanctified only to conceal darker truths, that the bones entombed within their grand cathedrals may not belong to saints at all, but to psychers, mutants, or even to aliens whose forms have been recast into imperial legend. Faith, after all, requires no proof. Only the unquestionable devotion of its followers. And once a billion tongues have named a thing as holy, then no power in the galaxy can possibly unmake it. To a faithful imperial citizen, there are few sights in the galaxy so profoundly humbling as of the surface to a shrine world. To set foot upon one is to realize that you have been walking on tainted grounds for your entire life, and that now you are within a realm sculpted entirely by faith. The art and architecture of the urban sprawl are as one, united together as a conjoined form of worship, while every plane has been paved in marble and engraved with holy scripture. At the heart of any shrine world, we will find the Basilica Majoris, a vast cathedral which serves as the focal point to both the ecclesiastical lords and to the bedraggled yet eager pilgrims. Some rise taller than the spires of a capital hive city, their peaks piercing the heavens and vanishing into the upper atmosphere. Within, a single nave might stretch for kilometers, supported by columns wide enough to house a rumbling squadron of Lehman Russ battle tanks. The ceilings will have been painted with scenes of divine triumph, some showing the Emperor's golden light banishing a score of heretics, while others seek to represent the original miracle of this world's patron saint. Around these sanctified centers, we will find the sprawling cities of the faithful. Every street is laid so that all roads lead directly to the large cathedrals, and where every citizen at all times may bask in the glorious sight of the ecclesiastical presence. Bridges and buttresses arc between the sanctuaries like rosary chains, sided by aqueducts carrying perfumed oils, destined to be wafted through the inner sanctums so as to ward off any evil spirits or nefarious apostates. Most shrine worlds will also contain several fortresses and monasteries dedicated to the devout members of the Emperor's Sisterhood. The Sisters of Battle may use these as their primary headquarters, though it is rather common to find smaller buildings for the non-militant orders, such as the Orders Fenestris, who are tasked with maintaining the sprawling displays of stained glass throughout the world. Some of the grand buildings will serve as the homes to the priesthood, containing very little in the way of amenities, though the wider populace will provide them with an overabundance of material support, selfishly hoping that it will grant them some favor with the Emperor of Man. Though the ecclesiarchy is technically forbidden from maintaining a standing army, the priests will hold a significant retinue of personal guards who are officially tasked with defending the shrine world, though will often be sent to enforce ecclesiastical order throughout the populace. On that topic, even amidst the splendor of the magnificent cathedrals and monasteries, one may very well spy the human cost of such devotion. For every shining wonder, there will be slums hiding beneath its shadow, tucked away in subterranean tunnels, so that their mere existence does not offend their patron saint. Some will be native to this world, having been forced out from their homes to make way for the rising of the great shrine. Others, however, came here from across the stars, bearing their wounds, debts, and sicknesses, caring not for whatever ailments they suffered, hoping only for a glimpse of the sacred relics of the imperial faith. Rather sadly, however, with untold billions making similar pilgrimages, it is only natural that some will fall short and never make it to the end. Many die in the streets, their bodies swept away by the processions of the living, with the priests claiming that such deaths are blessings, and that to perish within sight of the holy spire is to be carried directly into the Emperor's light. But for those who do not die, and are simply too weak to venture further into the cathedrals or to return home from their journey, then they must seek out the surviving refugees of the destitute, heading below ground to huddle for warmth and to quietly pray for the Emperor's salvation. Quite interestingly, in these hidden communities, we will sometimes find black markets dealing in the trade of relics, treasures, and other supposedly holy items. These are typically unremarkable, being of shards of stained glass, flakes of candle wax, or even grains of sand, said to have once been trodden by some far-off saint. As expected, many are fraudulent, but the customers here are the most desperate, and they will readily spend their remaining wealth in the hopes that it will somehow bless them through this pained existence. The actual routes for the pilgrims are truly rather remarkable, snaking through the continents, supposedly taking the faithful on the sacred path once trodden by this world's holy saint. So many pilgrims pass through each year that the paving stones will often be worn down to dust, exposing the visitors to the raw elements, which in truth typically enhances their perceived experience. It is not uncommon to find pilgrims walking on their knees, bleeding across hundreds of kilometers, as some act of needless penance. Others, however, drag heavy chains, reciting their canticles of redemption until their throats turn dry and hoarse. Overhead, the clouds will occasionally part to reveal golden-hulled vessels, gleaming out as they patrol the skies. Cargo freighters, replete with escort ships, carry relics and clergy members down to the surface, while hovering crafts boast choirs of servitors singing out continuous hymns for many years at a time. The air will be thick with incense, and the metallic scent of candle smoke, which some would claim tastes faintly of tears, as if the residue of deep prayer had somehow condensed upon the winds. Still, there is something rather sinister about such worlds. In the depths below the sanctuaries, away from the eyes of the devout, we will find the vaults of the ossuaries, chambers where the bones of the faithful are stacked high like crude masonry. Every pilgrim who dies upon a shrine world is interred somewhere within its depths. The wealthiest are entombed in gilded sarcophagi near the high altars, while the poor are pressed together into great walls of skulls, sealed in death behind occlusive layers of stained glass and ragged scripture. It is said that on every shrine world, that the dead outnumber the living a thousandfold, that their remains form the very foundations of the cathedrals, and that their faith was given form as the mortar that binds the stone. With all the death and with the sheer scale of the shrine worlds, we really must realize that there is simply no chance for any individual to have a meaningful moment here, and that rather sadly, this machine of faith does very little but to fill the coffers of the ecclesiarchy. It is a dark secret that every chant, every tolling bell, and every death in the name of pilgrimage does naught to venerate the emperor, and that all it does is to produce a psychic edifice, beaming out into the warp like a lighthouse, beckoning forth the foulest scions of the ruinous powers. Scholars of the Order Hereticus whisper that the Ministorum has long known this, that the prayers of humanity condense as a reservoir of psychic power, perhaps beckoning demonic interlopers to sally forth. Yet, whether this is truth or heresy depends only on which altar one kneels upon. Every shrine world bears a name, but behind that name lies a person, a saint whose legend has since eclipsed the very history of the planet itself. To the faithful, these saints were never akin to common mortals, as they are the bridges between humanity and divinity, souls who burned so fiercely in devotion that even death could not extinguish their light. As I mentioned in a previous chapter, a saint will be canonized only after the point of death, sometimes occurring immediately, but it is not unheard of for an individual to be named as a saint many decades, or even centuries after their fall. In life, they might have been soldiers, confessors, martyrs. It really doesn't matter, for they eventually rose above the common tide of humanity through some act of transcendent sacrifice. Yet once they pass, and once discovered by a priest, their memory will be seized and claimed by the ecclesiarchy, only to be shaped, polished, and reimagined into a perfect mirror of imperial faith. The reality of who they were is far less important than the myth to be created, and the rough mortal edges of their lives will be sanded away, fading to reveal only a story to benefit the imperial creed. The process of canonization, like with the creation of a shrine world, is unfortunately far more of a political matter than of a subject of faith. There are thousands of supposed miracles and divine individuals who are reported to the ecclesiarchy each day. And so it falls to the lowly scribes to sift through them, determining which should be brought to the attention of their superiors and which should be discarded as falsehoods. A council of priests will then assemble and review each case, engaging in endless ritual and debate, hopefully determining which miracles are genuine, which are fabrications, and which should be reported to the agents of the Inquisition. During this process, testimonies are to be gathered, relics analyzed, and entire generations of theologians may end up arguing for the rest of their meager lives over the precise wording of a single hagiography. In the end, however, what matters most is not whether a saint truly performed a miracle, but whether their story fits the emperor's purpose. A martyr who died defending the faith should obviously be exalted, but a visionary who once questioned the established doctrine, hoping to reform the imperial creed for the good of all mankind, will have flown too close to the emperor's light, and thus must be quietly erased from the tale of history. In any event, when a saint is declared as holy, then their cult will spread like a wildfire. Ignorant pilgrims will rush to the site of their death, building monuments and chapels in their honor, which, as we described in our last chapter, will form the foundations to the growing shrine world. Their bones will be divided into relics and scattered across the stars, each fragment usually to be inscribed with their most notable of deeds. A single finger may rest in a reliquary the size of a fortress. Drops of blood will be infused in the brickwork of a holy site. And in some exceedingly rare cases, a relic may be gifted to a notable warrior, so that they may be protected through an upcoming and dangerous conflict. The faithful believe that the saints will watch over them should their names be invoked, but of course there is no way of proving this as true, though denial would be seen as a mark of heresy by the priests of the Imperium. The truth of the saints, however, is a fragile thing, buried beneath centuries of adoration to the point where their true lives have been entirely replaced by the imperial myth. No one can say for certain what an ancient saint may have looked like of their early existence, nor of whether their miracles were brought about through faith or by forces far darker and most assuredly forbidden. The Ecclesiarchy teaches that doubt is heresy, yet doubt is all that remains when one peers too closely and finds deviations from the expected history. There are worlds where two sects of the same saint believe different miracles to have occurred, and countless saints whose teachings have been interpreted 100 different ways, turning pacifists into crusaders, and zealots into peacemakers. After all, time smooths all contradictions and opinions, and in the end, the surviving faith will simply choose which vision and which version to remember. And then there is the rumor of the saints who never truly existed. There are countless imperial saints, some born of rumor, some of legend, and some from deliberate fabrication, their stories crafted to inspire obedience or to conceal far less savory truths. Entire cults have been founded on falsehoods, their faith no less fervent than of a legitimate group, yet built entirely on empty deceit. The Ecclesiarchy would never admit to such inventions, but their lies serve as important tools meant to bind the masses closer to their intended interpretation of divinity. Some saints may be venerated as warriors, with their shrines adorned with banners and weaponry, often exalted by the zealous sisters of battle who fight to bring themselves closer to their patron. Others embody humility, and naturally, the non-militant orders will gravitate towards their deeds. With that said, in the hidden corners of the galaxy, it has been known for darker cults to emerge, worshipping saints whose miracles certainly border on heresy. These wayward souls may believe their saint to have healed mutants or to have witnessed the Emperor, not as a god, but as a simple man. These cults are often hunted to extinction, as they obviously go against the teachings of the Imperial Creed, but they will never truly die, as the soils of faith are far too rich for weeds to never grow. No matter how holy a world may be, and no matter how precious it is to the devoted followers of its patron saint, it can never be safe from the prowling forces of the dark. In the Imperium, there is no such thing as a sanctity so pure that time, greed, or heresy cannot entirely corrupt it. Shrine worlds do indeed stand as radiant beacons of faith, but every flame casts a shadow, and the brighter the flame, the deeper the darkness beneath. There are countless ways in which a shrine world may die. Some are consumed by war, their cathedrals shattered by orbital bombardments, their relics reduced to ash and scattered into the void. Others rot from within, spared from the dangers of an outright invasion, yet still destined to fall victim to the excess of their followers, whose faith swells into a fanaticism so strong that they themselves cannot be exempt from holy retribution. The Ecclesiarchy's records speak of worlds which burned in divine fire, such as Liruna Majoris, whose faithful tore down their own basilicas to erect a pyre large enough to be seen from orbit, believing that the Emperor's return would be heralded in holy flame. The ash choked their cities, and when no miracle came, and when the saints' remains stayed silent, they could only resolve to burn themselves instead. A billion souls ascending as one in a cloud of smoke and madness. On the world of Saint Tryon's Rest, the blood of its pilgrims seeped so deeply into the earth that the soils turned red. But when the oceans themselves took on a crimson hue and began screaming through the night, the Inquisition was forced to step in and render its merciless judgment. The planet was thusly sterilized and its saints purged from all official records, with every relic retrieved from the farthest corners of the cosmos, condemned to burn in the flames of righteousness, now set adrift like black snow across the void. Sometimes, however, the blasphemy can be far quieter, casting so much doubt upon the world that the pilgrims are forced to abandon their faith and silently depart on a new journey. It is not unheard of for relics to be stolen, replicated, or replaced until no one can say for certain as to which fragment of bone was ever real. Pilgrims who kneel before false idols will find their prayers to go unanswered, yet their faith will remain undimmed by deception. And perhaps that is the darkest of all possible heresies. After all, even lies can become holy so long as enough followers believe them. The demonic legions of the warp will always seek to target imperial planets for their incursions, though the corruption of a shrine world will forever remain as the greatest prize of all. The psychic weight of endless worship draws the attention from beasts best left unnamed, but if left unchecked, then the Neverborn will slip through the veil, disguising themselves as visions, only to sour legitimate miracles into living nightmares. Entire congregations may vanish mid-sermon, their voices echoing for days in a newly abandoned cathedral. And though the Ecclesiarchy will merely rebrand such events as a test of faith, the Ordo Malleus knows for certain that they are the first stages of a demonic infestation. It is said that the greater demons of the warp, and even the chaos gods themselves, may envy the existence of the shrine worlds, for they are some of the only places in the galaxy where mortal souls have built a power to rival their own. They are the focal points to a network of devotion, spanning the entirety of the material plane, fueling and empowering the corpse of the God Emperor, partly suspended from his true death upon the Golden Throne. Traitors, demons, and heretical cults all delight in the desecration of the holy symbols of the Imperium, and the seizure of a shrine world would allow them to defile altars, twist the faces of saints into visages of horror, and to bathe in the hot blood of the faithful. Yet even in ruin, these worlds do not lose their significance, as pilgrims will still come to walk through the ashes, to pray upon the charred bones, and to prove that faith indeed endures even after its material truth has died. The Imperium cannot abide by the worship of objects tainted by chaos, and so it will answer such ruin with absolute judgment. An exterminatus is not an uncommon fate for fallen shrine worlds. The order will be given, the final prayers whispered, and orbital fire will rain down to cleanse their sins with total annihilation. To destroy an imperial world is no small decision, and no inquisitor truly wishes to make that call. Yet they are necessary sacrifices, and those agents will be forced to justify their actions by claiming that the Emperor himself demanded their cleansing. Perhaps there is truth here, and maybe the Emperor would indeed understand their act. But rather, maybe there is simply no empire, however pious, that can bear to gaze upon its own corruption. Yet even destruction cannot erase faith entirely. Across the galaxy, there are shrine worlds long dead, whose ruins still glow faintly when the sun sets, emitting the softest hint of phosphorescent light, born of fading radiation, or perhaps from some semblance of lingering holiness. Pilgrims may still come, never daring to make planetfall, yet watching from afar, wishing to leave lone candles in the craters where great basilicas once stood. In high orbit aboard their vessels, they will amass in their huddled congregations, joining in prayer to the lost saints. And in their song, one might almost imagine that their faith remains unshaken. No matter how dark the endless void of the galaxy may seem, to the meek citizens of the Imperium of Man, the countless shrine worlds will shine out like great candles, serving as undeniable proof to the legitimacy of their faith. Each burns with the same frail light, flickering and guttering, yet never destined to be fully extinguished. They are the greatest of monuments to a faith which almost collapsed with the defeat of the Emperor over 10,000 years ago, and to which will surely stand tall even as the Imperium itself decays around them. Mankind, though resilient beyond all belief, cannot endure through pure strength nor wisdom, and perhaps it is only thanks to their faith, no matter how blind, fervent, or unrelenting it may be, that they have survived through this time of ending. It is the faith which drives the pilgrim fleets across the stars, inspiring them to build cathedrals upon bones and ashes, and which turns their endless suffering into purpose and their countless deaths into meaning. Without it, the Imperium would surely collapse into silence, its armies would falter, its worlds would crumble, and the light of man would fade forever. And maybe, just maybe, it is belief alone that sustains the corpse of their Emperor. Yet, as we have seen, the same faith which blesses them is also a most potent curse. It inspires the greatest works of devotion, but also the most accursed of cruelties. The hope it provides to the weary is unquestionable, but it will always be perverted into the justifications of the powerful, who use it as a means to render unparalleled condemnations to those who stand opposed to their ideals. Still, even knowing this, one cannot help but feel some semblance of awe. As we take our final steps upon our shrine world, we must acknowledge that we are bearing witness to the impossible, in that we are seeing the living evidence of humanity defying the cold horrors of the stars, and to declare that meaning certainly still exists. But with this, my dearest friends, I do believe that we have now come to our end. Thank you all so much for listening to this sermon on the shrine worlds of the Imperium in its entirety. But our vessel is ready for its departure. And so, as has become our habit, it is now time for us to leave. Do remember that I shall soon return for another such investigation. But until that day comes, know that I greatly appreciate your time, and that I must now wish each and every one of you with a very warm goodbye.